going to read this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Description of the Kingdom of God. And we'll read 18 through 20. Maitreya is answering questions given by Vidura in this canto, and the previous chapter is Aditi's pregnancy. Aditi's pregnancy, so that means Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were soon to appear, and there's some discussion here about the disturbance that the demigods were feeling even before the two demons were born. The whole sky in the whole universe had become darkened, and it was a very fearful condition. And the demigods prayed to Lord Brahma, "Please look upon us mercifully, for we have fallen into a miserable condition because of the darkness. All of our work has been suspended. As fuel covers a fire, so the embryo created in the womb of Diti has caused complete darkness throughout the universe. You know, please do something." Lord Brahma understood, and then he described rather than giving an immediate, like, "Here's the solution to your problem," he began a historical narration to describe who Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu are in fact. In other words, it's part of the plan of the Lord. Brahma said, "The four Kumaras born from my mind, your predecessors, O demigods, sometimes they travel here and there throughout the whole universe without any definite desire. So one time when traveling they went to the Vaikuntha planets," and so he's describing now the Vaikuntha planets. That's the context. All of this is to tell them at the end, "Don't worry, everything's going to be all right." Part of the plan of the Lord. But we're getting a picture of the spiritual world from the vantage point of the four Kumaras. So the verses in between that point and what we're going to read today describes what it looks like, what the residents are like, and one of the themes from that little section is going to repeat itself again, is while there's the fullness of spiritual opulence, there's no attraction for being enjoyers of opulence. There's no slightest hint, not even a trace of sense gratification propensity. Not even a trace. And the reason is there's another happiness. And the other happiness is the happiness of transcendental love. That is the happiness of the beloved. because that's so prominent, full, in that realm of opulence, there is the sense of enjoyment of the opulence is, it's absent. The abode of the Lord is as opulent as the Lord is. He's full in all opulences, and his abode displays those opulences, and the devotees, those that are qualified to reside there, they're not attracted to be the enjoyer of the opulences of the Lord. They're attracted to the happiness of the Lord. It looks like paradise, like, you know, material paradise. Yeah, let's go and enjoy. Not so. That's the picture we're getting. So, text 18. When the king of bees hums in a high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there's a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeon, the cuckoo, the crane, the chakravaka, the swan, the parrot, the partridge, and the peacock. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. Purport. This verse reveals the absolute nature of Vaikuntha. There is no difference between the birds there and the human residents. The situation in the spiritual sky is that everything is spiritual and variegated. Spiritual variegatedness means that everything is animate. There's nothing inanimate. Even the trees, the ground, the plants, the flowers, the birds, and the beasts are all on the level of Krishna consciousness. The special feature of Vaikuntha is that there is no question of sense gratification, mentioned previously. Special feature. In the material world, even an ass enjoys his sound vibration. But in Vaikunthas, such nice birds as the peacock, the chakravakas, and the cuckoo prefer to hear the vibration of the glories of the Lord from the bees. The principles of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting, are very prominent in the Vaikuntha world. Makes you want to go there, right? So pretty much, this is inconceivable. The animate beings are spiritual. Even the ground, the water, the wind. I mean, how do you conceive of that? How do you contemplate that one? It's inconceivable. While there's variegatedness, there's not a pecking order or sense of superiority or envy, because that comes from those things. Someone's got something that I don't have. I wish I had that something that they have. So there's envy. There's no envy. They appreciate, apparently, I never heard bees singing glories of the Lord, but apparently in the Vaikuntha realm they do that. And they sing the glories of the Lord so nicely, the other singing birds remain silent just to hear the king of bees, humming. So even the flapping of their wings of the bees is the glories, singing the glories of the Lord. Some animated cartoonist could maybe try to create something like this, but then it would just seem, you know, that's cute and fanciful. But what an experience of that is in reality, and the Bhagavatam is disclosing that reality. No sense gratification, no question of sense gratification, no question of envy, no question of inequality. In the material world, there is inequality. There, on the spiritual plane, spirit souls are equal. But the covering of the spirit soul, the body and the mind, they're not equal. There are divisions by guna and karma, by Krishna's arrangement, by natural arrangement, there's divisions. And with divisions, there's different duties and so forth. So it makes it more challenging, to say the least, to see with pandita samadarshana, because the variegatedness is unequal. But in the spiritual world, there's variegatedness, and yet there's no envy. There's no pecking order. Everyone is doing according to their spiritual constitutional nature. And because of that, they're fully happy, fully satisfied. And because they're fully satisfied, there's no envy, no coveting. Oh, I wish... sometimes devotees ask this question, can you, if you're in the spiritual world, can you move from one rasa to another rasa? And at least from my perspective, that's a material calculation, as if, oh, I have this rasa, but I want that rasa. There's a position of complete satisfaction, whatever one's constitutional position is, because it's one's nature, and it's the happiness is Krishna's happiness, and Krishna's happiness is variegated. And then Prabhupada says in the purport, spiritual variegatedness means that everything is animate. Here there's variegatedness and not everything is animate. It's a reflection of the spiritual variegatedness, and therefore the variegatedness here is not what real variegatedness is. Real variegatedness is animate. And he says it conversely, there's nothing inanimate. It's the the fullness of the internal potency of Krishna, the Sandini potency of Krishna, manifesting all variegatedness for the pleasure of Krishna. And the living entities are part of that variegatedness, and their happiness is Krishna's happiness, and different glorifications of the Supreme Lord by different entities are appreciated by the different entities. No envy. Like an unending crescendo of Krishna's happiness or Narayana's happiness. That's Vaikuntha. No anxiety. Text 19. Although flowering plants like the Mandarakunda, Kura Baka, Utpava, Champaka, Arna, Punaga, Nagakesha, Nagakeshara, Bakula, Lily, and Parijata are full of transcendental fragrance. They are still conscious of the austerities performed by Tulasi, for Tulasi is given special preference by the Lord, who garlands himself with tulsi leaves. So first we heard about the bees and the birds, now we're hearing about the trees and flowering plants. They're also non-envious, and they're also fully conscious, and they honor one who is most pleasing to Krishna without any envy and no reservation, no feeling, oh, I'm not good enough, I'm not a tulsi, I'm simply a something else. Purport. The importance of tulsi leaves is very clearly mentioned here. In fact, it's right in the Sanskrit. Tulasi ka. Tulsi plants and their leaves are very important in devotional service. Devotees are recommended to water the tulsi tree every day and collect the leaves to worship the Lord. One time an atheistic Swami remarked, I know which one it was, what is the use of watering tulsi plant? It is better to water eggplant. By watering the eggplant, one can get some fruits. What is the use of watering the tulsi? Unquote. These foolish creatures, unacquainted with devotional service, sometimes play havoc with the education of people in general. End of paragraph. The most important thing about the spiritual world is that there is no envy among the devotees there. This is true even among the flowers, which are all conscious of the greatness of tulsi in the Vaikuntha world, entered by the four Kumaras. Even the birds and flowers are conscious of service to the Lord. In the verses mentioned, tapa doesn't explain the tapa of tulsi. But that's for a fully spiritual personality. What looks like us to be tapa, for them is ecstasy. Like a common saying is, austerity is the wealth of a brahmana. Austerity is the wealth of a brahmana. So austerity sounds like ouch, like, you know, it's something that hurts, that's something that's austere. Or depriving oneself of something in a strong way, a rigorous way, and, you know, like deprivation, austerity. But what inspires the brahmana is not painful. It's bringing consciousness to the absolute and from that detachment from the temporary so-called material happiness, and to us that looks like austerity. And perhaps in the beginning the practice of Brahminical culture may seem austere. Like, a very obvious example is the following the regular principles. For a worldly personality, these four prohibitions are impossible. That's unthinkable. Forget exactly the historical reference, but there was someone who came to investigate, like a secret agent type of person came to investigate the Hare Krishna movement, thinking that it was some kind of subversive da-da-da-da-da kind of thing. And when they saw the standards that the devotees were following, the regular principles, they realized, you know, this can't be done by coercion or some, you know, there's something special going on here. It's not ordinary. Ordinary people being able to strictly follow the regular principles and be happy. Not like torture, but be happy. So in the beginning, that which is of the quality of goodness, just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it may seem like painful or difficult, severe. But as one becomes purified, it's happiness. And to be without something is a form of wealth. Like an extreme example of this is Kulavichar Sridhar, who was so poor. And one time when Lord Chaitanya was teasing him, he said, "I know you have some secret treasure hidden somewhere. You have the greatest treasure, but I'll disclose that to others later." But the greatest treasure was his love for Krishna. And because of that love for Krishna, he was so satisfied. He wasn't thinking his life was austere. I have what I need. Prabhupada many times told the story of one king. In now Krishna Nagar, the king some 100 and something years ago was King Krishna Chandra in Krishna Nagar. Very humbly he named the place after himself. And King Krishna Chandra had a son, and his son was entrusted to one brahmana to train in his gurukul. And his son was becoming trained so nicely that the king personally went to express his gratitude to the teacher, the brahmana. And when he got to the teacher's residence, he was shocked to see how apparently poverty-stricken, how austere his life was. So the king said, I'm so grateful for what you've done to train my son so nicely. I'd like to give you something. You're living in this poverty-stricken condition." And the Brahmin said, "What do you mean? I'm not in a poverty-stricken condition. I have everything I need. I have a little house. I have a tamarind tree. Take some tamarind leaves from the tamarind tree, and my wife prepares some rice boiled with tamarind leaves, and I'm satisfied. I have what I need. Thank you, but no thank you." So I wasn't thinking, "Oh, at last, now I can have some comforts." He was satisfied. So that's a brahmana on this plane. What is being presented here is the pure devotees on the transcendental plane. And not just the human form of pure devotees, but all the others. The plants, the flowering trees, the birds. all opulence and no attraction. Someone can sing very nicely, one bird and another bird, something, something, or one flowering plant and creeper, and there's no envy. The happiness is that Krishna's happiness. That's the standard of no envy. That's Vaikuntha. When there is such a condition of consciousness, Krishna can manifest all opulences, and it's not disturbing to the minds of those individuals, because it's Krishna's happiness. It's natural that Vaikuntha is full of all opulences besides its Krishna's abode. Those who reside there aren't bewildered by that. They're not enamored by that. They're not trying to be the enjoyers of that. That fruitive tendency is awful. It spoils everything. It's the nature of the material world. One other little detail, in discussing time, there's a purport where Prabhupada describes the time energy is fruitive, manifests itself as fruitive activity. Because so in the spiritual world, everything is eternal. Not only is opulent, and there's no envy, but it's eternally existing. And that's another inconceivable. How do you think of eternity? Or it's that which has no beginning and that which has no end. How do you think of that? Or activity that's not within time. How do you think of that? It's inconceivable. But that's the nature of Vaikuntha. That's the nature of the spiritual world. Time is conspicuous by its absence. Fruitive intention is totally absent. Sense gratification, totally absent. Modes of nature, totally absent. You know, if you just go on down, absent this, absent that, it sounds like it's homogenized Brahman. Impersonal nothingness. But it's not. It's full variegatedness. Full opulence. Full contentment. One does things not to get something, but one does something to further the happiness of Krishna. And that's it. There's not another purpose. Most amazing place. No envy. So that's the birds and the bees and the flowering plants. Now we'll hear about the airplanes, and we'll hear about the forms of the individuals, the human-like form. The inhabitants of Vaikuntha travel in their airplanes made of lapis lazuli, emerald, and gold. Although crowded by their consorts, who have large hips and beautiful smiling faces, they cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. Purport. In the material world, opulences are achieved by materialistic persons by dint of their labor. One cannot enjoy material prosperity unless he works very hard to achieve it. But the devotees of the Lord, who are residents of Vaikuntha, have the opportunity to enjoy a transcendental situation of jewels and emeralds. Ornaments made of gold, bedecked with jewels, are achieved not by working hard, but by the benediction of the Lord. In other words, devotees in Vaikuntha world, or even in this material world, cannot be poverty-stricken. as is sometimes supposed. They have ample opulences for enjoyment, but they need not labor to achieve them. It is also stated that in the Vaikuntha world, the consorts of the residents are many, many times more beautiful than we can find in the material world, even in the higher planets. It is specifically mentioned here that a woman's large hips are very attractive and they stimulate men's passion. But the wonderful feature of Vaikuntha is that although the women have large hips and beautiful faces and are decorated with ornaments of emeralds and jewels, the men are so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that the beautiful bodies of the women cannot attract them. In other words, there is enjoyment of the association of the opposite sex, but there is no sexual relationship. The residents of Vaikuntha have a better standard of pleasure, so there is no need of sex pleasure. Well, I looked up lapis lazuli because I don't know what it is. And it says, this Wikipedia says, that it's a semi-precious blue stone, particularly known in Afghanistan, going back to long, long time ago. And, you know, it's found special places even in Siberia and so on. So its special feature is its rich blue color. And then when polished, it's stunning. So it's just stone, but a rich blue stone. And the statement here is that their vimanas were made of lapis lazuli, emerald and gold. The word in the Sanskrit for lapis lazuli is Vaidurya. And Vaidurya, I looked up Vaidurya. And there's many different. Sometimes it's emeralds, sometimes it's diamonds, sometimes it's lapis lazuli. But, you know, an airplane made of stone? Why not? And lapis lazuli, or emerald, or diamond, it's two things. It's not the lapis lazuli, emerald, or diamond that's here. Meaning, minimally, everything in the spiritual world is fully conscious. We heard that already. Everything is fully conscious. So what's a lapis lazuli stone that's fully conscious? It's not of this world. And Vaidurya also indicates a common presentation of Vaidurya is a stone that can change color, although the stone itself doesn't change. Something like a chameleon, that's one entity, but according to the circumstances and the surrounding, it can change color, but it's just one entity. So the Vaidurya mani, the Vaidurya stone, has that feature. Whether it's blue or whether it's green or whether it's sparkling diamond in appearance, it's opulent for sure. And the vimanas are made of these very, 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 very opulent, as the palaces are also made of opulent material. Again, not if you could, if there was a vimana made of, in this world, made of lapis lazuli stone, who can imagine what that would be like? And this is better than that. And they're all better than that. They're all incredibly exquisite in their beauty. But the residents are not thinking, oh, this is really cool, I get to ride a lapis lazuli airplane. And in their company are their consorts with very, more attractive than the most attractive heavenly attractiveness. And they're enjoying, specifically, there is enjoyment in the association of the opposite sex. But there's no attraction for sensual enjoyment, as there is when those things happen here. Obviously, our program is not to imitate. Our program is to appreciate and find attraction in that realm where there's at least in Vaikuntha, unlimited opulence. So for us to be happy where there's no opulence, that looks like austerity, or where there's opulence, that also looks like austerity. Oh, this person is falsely austere, they should be enjoying. But to be in the midst of opulence and not be in an enjoying mood, that's an opulence. That's a greater opulence. And that's the opulence of the denizens of Vaikuntha. So Krishna is exhibiting the fullness of his opulences. And the denizens are not bewildered by the jewels, the singing, the fragrances, the beautiful bodies of their associates. They're enjoying in their company, but the enjoyment is the glorification of the Supreme Lord. That's the spiritual world. Commonly, Prabhupada would speak about our temples, and he would say, our temples are not in this world, they're in Vaikuntha. I heard him say it twice in Brooklyn, I heard him say it once in Manhattan, then I kind of got the idea he meant it. And then I heard it later that he said the same thing in Los Angeles, and he said the same thing elsewhere. This temple is not in Los Angeles, it's Vaikuntha. You know, that was at least the consciousness, Vaikuntha consciousness, or Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada wanted to generate. What's the nature of the Vaikuntha consciousness? Krishna is at the center. Everything is being done for the pleasure of Krishna. Everything is being done for the pleasure of Krishna. Whether it's whatever it is, or walking, or eating, or associating with one another, or having a living circumstance, or whatever it is, it for the pleasure of Krishna, for the purpose of seeing, maximizing the service of Krishna, for his pleasure. And everything else is following behind that one thing. I like the example that Prabhupada gave of the faithful queen. Of course, there's other kinds, but the faithful queen, by the king's arrangement, has a beautiful palace and has many ladies in waiting, and they're just ready to attend to the slightest little whim and fancy of the queen. But the faithful queen, as she moves about the palace here and there, she's not interested. Her attraction is not, no, I have such nice facility for enjoying. All these ladies, they'll do whatever I want at any moment. Her attraction is the happiness of the king. Because of that absorption in the happiness of the king, she now has so many opulences, which she's not so attracted to. She's attracted to the happiness of the king. Like that, one may very well have a situation of material comfort. I'm probably not the only one that was noticing as the weather change came in really fast. It was getting really cold. And here we are, you know, very comfortable temperature, and it's very nice. And but, you know, the Potomac Temple room is very cold. You have to keep your jacket on. I would have the money to pay the heat, I guess. But we can sit in the middle of the winter in some situation and keep our minds fixed on Krishna. So the facility should, the opportunity should be taken for the purpose it's provided. That is, really concentrate on the personality of Godhead. Because there are other options, just like, you know, shut off the heat or, you know, shiver or whatever. Subject yourself to some kind of austerity. And then you think of Krishna. Oh, Krishna, it's so cold. Or whatever, I'm so hungry, or something. Having one's consciousness absorbed in thought of Krishna and acting only for his happiness is real happiness, although it may look like austerity. It's Vaikuntha consciousness. It's real happiness. Life gives us plenty of opportunity for austerity. You don't have to go looking for it. But when we pass through those circumstances of some discomfort or something, some tribulation, some ordeal, some difficulty, some obstacle, or 10 of them, the Vaikuntha consciousness is to take shelter of Krishna, and by taking shelter of Krishna, that condition of pure heart, without being distracted or attracted by other things, just staying absorbed in Krishna's happiness, contemplating Krishna's happiness. That's Vaikuntha. We can practice that. One last thing. They cannot be stimulated to passion by their mirth and beautiful charms. So in Vaikuntha, there's the absence of the modes of nature. In the river Viraja, which is the dividing line between the spiritual and material world, there's also the absence of the modes of nature. There's a description earlier in this canto, chapter 8, where Maitreya is describing the sub-creation of Lord Brahma. And he's starting from the point where the living entities, in their subtle bodies, are situated during the night of Brahma in the river Viraja, or the place where it's neither the spiritual nor the material world, the ocean in which he equates, the Bhagavatam is equating the river Viraja with the causal ocean or the Garbhadak ocean where the Lord is residing. And time is there because events are happening. At least there's this suspended condition, but soon the time energy is going to bring the unmanifest again to the manifest state. So time energy is there, but the modes are not active. The modes are absent. So in that neutral condition, the modes are not active. In the Vaikuntha region, the modes are not active. Specifically, the opulences do not stimulate passion, raja. And Prabhupada just goes right to the point in the purport. Sex pleasure doesn't stimulate. It's not stimulated. Even being in the stimuli or the presence of attractive objects that for a conditioned soul would stimulate that position. And specifically also this word mirth, it's an old English term. Merriment. Great celebration and like a festival. Mirth. The mood of happiness and enjoyment, and but despite being in the association of their consorts, where that's the mood, it's not a sense enjoyment mood, it's not a sense gratification mood, it doesn't go there. It's another kind of merriment or mirth, the happiness, the ecstasy of being in Krishna's service. That's Vaikuntha. Sometimes people, when they hear this description, like it flipped plus earlier, you know, that how come there's marriage? How come there's, you know, men and women getting together in Vaikuntha if there's no, you know, none of that other thing going on? It's just service. It's just service, just happiness of being with one another in service to the Supreme Lord. It's a whole other condition. The residents of Vaikuntha have a far better standard of pleasure, so there's no need of the other. Any discussion?
I want to cultivate that consciousness of trying to please Krishna.
Great.
In activities.
Great.
So starting chanting.
Great.
How is that pleasing to Krishna, because I'm chanting his names, or because I'm trying to purify to become his servant, or something else?
Sampath? Yes. It's natural. But Krishna's happiness is knowing that our happiness will be achieved. That's his loving happiness. So by calling Krishna's name, all spiritual potencies are invested in his name, and so Krishna is pleased by knowing that you're becoming spiritually elevated. But it's not, the ego of someone calling our name is absent in Krishna, but the pure condition of Krishna's happiness, it's, Prabhupada explains, it's natural. It's natural. Krishna wants, just like Lord Chaitanya gave, the chanting of the holy name. He's Krishna himself. Why? Because you'll become purified, you'll become restored to your healthy condition, happy condition, perfect condition. That's happiness. Yes.
Would the residents of Vaikuntha not like thinking about, oh, I'm not them, so like that satisfaction is there for them to be whatever they are?
Yeah.
How to understand about being satisfied versus need of growth to
keep, finish your sentence.
There is the need of growth in Krishna consciousness, and at the same time how to also feel like satisfaction, or how should I?
They're not contradictory. It's a relationship. In a relationship, let's say you're married and you're doing some things in the household that are intended for the pleasure of your husband, serving your husband nicely, and he lets you know in a number of ways he's very happy, so you can feel satisfied. At the same time, because of relationship, you wish to see how that can be enhanced in some way or another, not complacency. So spiritual reality is dynamic. While there's connection with Krishna, that being satisfaction. Because there's connection with Krishna, I always wish to improve. My growth is for his happiness. It's going to be my relief also, but it's for his happiness ultimately. And when that happens, the devotees that are close to me, they'll also become happy to see that. So, relationship. If it's just me, and I become more or better or something like that, then it's not so satisfying. It's not as satisfying. It's tinged materially. Here's a tulsi plant. The winter is coming, there's fewer leaves. So, what to do? And we can be satisfied, well, there's some leaves. But, we like to see, so we do something. I may not even know exactly what to do to make Tulsi look more healthy, but I'll try this and try here. So it's the improving, it's a service, and Krishna will be pleased. Well, you get the idea. On the one hand, so it's the connection with Krishna is there. There's always room for improvement. Satisfied that it's a dichotomy or a dialectic that devotees learn to live with. Finding happiness in Krishna's service and wishing to be able to serve Krishna better. Something else? Yes.
Well, in the Vaikuntha world, there is no envy, no vice, no passion. But then, how to understand the soul falling down?
Any other question? We've been through this discussion before. Yeah.
No. I didn't hear classes, but I didn't ask.
Okay. Hundreds of times. Hundreds of times. Listen to them. something else. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, like regarding the related to the stress classes, Guru Maharaj, like when I face some obstacles, and in the process, I try to take shelter of Krishna, and I feel like, and sometimes it has become mechanical. I take pride of it, like I feel proud, something like that. Guru Maharaj, that is one area. The second area is like I also go into more into lamentation. So I'm sitting like, how can I like try to better my.
Chant your rounds better. Hey, like in a child, walking propensity is there, and just by continuing to practice walking, the walking propensity comes out. Similarly, the standard of pure devotional service is innately there. It's within each and every one of us, and we continue to practice. We see this shortcoming, that shortcoming, this mistake, and that weakness, and we get up and continue practicing. With faith in the process itself, the innate capacity is there, and by following this given, scripturally given process, that which is, the innate capacity will come out. Have faith in the process, not so much in myself, but in the process, in the merciful Krishna, and Krishna's merciful process. So I just pick myself up, and this, when that recognition, there is progress in recognizing this deficiency, because there was time when that light wasn't on. It was dark. So now there's recognition. Continue with the process that has the potency to take one to the other side of those shortcomings. And however many times you pick yourself up and continue with the process, you just keep doing that. And strive qualitatively to make the connection with Krishna very strong, especially in the chanting of the holy name. That will give you the purity and strength to keep moving.
The question is about actually subtle versus gross comfort zones.
Well, which about?
I was just thinking to.
Comfort zone, and what's the other one?
Subtle and.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Subtle and
gross comfort zones.
Okay, I don't know exactly what that is.
It's sometimes not. It's easy to give up the gross comfort
zones. Okay.
And when it comes to giving up the subtle one, it becomes very kind of painful for me. And something practical that I can apply.
Yeah, it's just painful because of attachment. It's not painful. It's happy. It's liberating. It's freedom. And the painful is attachment. So when you find, you know, the ones that go easily, that's nice. And then the ones that don't go so easily, you pay attention. And when some painful or uncomfortable or whatever it is, experience occurs again and again and again, pay attention to it, because it's important to pay attention, pay attention to that weakness and bring strength from the other practices that you do in Krishna consciousness to that weakness. It's not like, don't not become obsessive about it, but be aware that that's operating. And put something over here, like the greater happiness. And then look at that. This is the greater happiness. And you continue to cultivate the greater happiness while you're aware that this other tendency is there. It's attachment. We're attached to our suffering, which doesn't make really sense because we want to be happy, but we're attached to our suffering. We're attached to the source of suffering. We're attached to the suffering. Like, I deserve it, I should suffer, or something like that. Attachment. It's a diseased condition. So go to the healthy condition, take the medicine. Well, you recognize you're managing, you're in the medical field, so you know the whole thing. You manage what the problem is, but attention needs to go to the whole healthy, wholesome activity, because that's going to help with the healing part. You do this part. Yes?
Regarding Tulsi Maharani, I understand the basic things, a few things.
That's good.
Like how she's pure devotee,
okay.
How Krishna is the dancer with Tulsi, like that.
Okay.
But I want to appreciate more. Could you share something more about Tulsi
Maharani? I'm not too good at that one. It's sufficient to me that Tulsi is dear to Krishna, and so that's what's important. Tulsi is the giver of bhakti. How does that happen? She's given the entitlement by Krishna to give bhakti.
Oh, come on.
Supposing you got the answer, how's that going to help your Krishna consciousness?
Well, only in paying obeisances, when I'm playing the Premadhani prayers, I can think properly. That's only thought matters.
It's it's one of those questions, academic questions. Tulsi is the bestower of bhakti, and there's Bhakti Devi, and Tulsi is the bestower of bhakti. So take your pick, Bhakti Devi or Tulsi Devi. We honor both. And here she is. She's in a form, a very approachable form. We can serve, circumambulate water, sit before Tulsi and chant, and enter into it. So put it in the practical platform rather than the abstract one.
You said that there is no envy in spiritual life.
Fantastic, huh?
But there is so much envy in me, actually, here, like, by seeing other devotees or other, somebody, sometimes, outside this also, I feel some pain, some envy, that I don't have something and they have something, so it comes up. So
that's the material world, and then there's the spiritual world.
How to come to that?
Move to the spiritual world. Put in a requisition slip. I'd like a place there, please. And they'll say, okay, well, you've got to become qualified. Okay, what do I have to become qualified? Chant very nicely, serve the devotees nicely, hear the scripture nicely, serve the deity nicely, serve your family nicely. Okay, I'll work on that. You cultivate so that that quality can come, so you can enter. It's being, just as being described here. You honor those souls, whether they're birds or creepers or men and women in the spiritual world who have that quality. By hearing about such individuals, it's uplifting. One becomes brought to that position by hearing about persons that are free from that quality. remembering them, describing them, hearing them, glorifying, like that. We have the means, just apply the means. Like this, follow the process. Okay, Hare Krishna.